Roseburg, Oregon, is beginning the slow road to healing following last week's mass shooting at Umpqua Community College. And that road is a familiar one for our next guest. 3 years ago, Caitlin Roig DeBellis was teaching her first graders at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, when 20-year-old Adam Lanza entered the school and shot and killed 20 kids and 6 adults. In the years that have followed, Caitlin has rebuilt her life. She got married, became a motivational speaker, and founded the nonprofit organization Classes for Classes. And she's written a new book. It's called Choosing Hope, Moving Forward from Life's Darkest Hours, and it comes out today. Caitlin Roig DeBellis joins us from New York. Welcome.
I'm so grateful to be here.
And it's great to have you. We were going to have you on anyway, but now that we're talking just days after this terrible attack in Oregon, your thoughts on that? When you see an attack like that, do you feel numb to it, as President Obama says, or because you've been through something like this, is it different for you?
I absolutely do not feel numb to it. The pain, unfortunately, is very close to my heart. My heart goes out to that community, to the victims, to their families. It's just awful.
And do you feel like it could have been avoided if something was done after Sandy Hook?
I'm so grateful that in our nation right now we're having the discussion. And that those conversations are being had because they are so important and truly crucial. You know, as a teacher, though, my expertise in knowing what the answer is or what should be done, you know, my focus is on making sure that kids are successful. That's what I know how to do.
But as someone who's gone through something like this, you must have thought to yourself, there might be something that could be done to avoid something like this happening again.
Well, I hope that we are taking all the steps to make our country a safer place.
Well, of course, you have every right to you know, not take a political position on something that's obviously a very big controversy in this country about what should be done. But some listeners may wonder why you haven't after all that you've been through.
Oh, well, I think I absolutely did. I think it's very clear that when I say that I'm grateful it's being discussed on the platform it is and that something needs to be done, it's clear that I'm saying that there is a problem and something needs to be done. Where I draw the line is thinking that I'm the expert in knowing what that is or how it should be solved, because I'm certainly not.
But that's in terms of more gun control, for example, are you in favor of that?
I'm in favor of smart gun sense. I am in favor of awareness and of working very hard to change that climate.
We'll take us back to your experience, as you do in this book, and it is really unbelievable to read about it. But let's go back to that day, December 14th, 2012. It started out for you as a normal school day, but very quickly you realized something was wrong.
Yes, my classroom was the first in the school. So at around 9:30 in the morning, my kids and I were sitting in our morning meeting as we do every day. We had just greeted one another and just finished listening to the Oklahoma version of Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, when very loud, rapid fire shots began over and over and over. My class was feet from where this was happening, and so I knew immediately that we were in imminent danger and that time was of the essence and that our chance at survival was hiding.
And you gathered up children and took them into a bathroom.
We raced to the back of our room, and we just started piling in.
How many were in there?
I had 16 students in 2012. 15 were present, so 16 with me.
And this is not a large bathroom, by the way. Very small one.
No, it is. Until that day, I had never stepped foot inside of it. It was probably 3 by 4 foot space with a toilet in the center. Very, very tiny.
And did you feel like you and the children would be safe in there?
I hoped we would, but no, I didn't ever think that we would get out of that bathroom based on our proximity to what we were hearing.
What did you tell them in there?
Well, there wasn't a ton of talking because obviously noise meant that you know, that evil could come closer to us. So we did remain very quiet, but I did not want what they were hearing in that hallway and on the other side of our classroom wall to be the last thing they heard. So I told them that I was so grateful to be their teacher, how lucky I was to have them in my class, and that I loved them very much. I mean, I had to step in there in that moment and make sure that they heard something loving.
And by the way, when people came to the door, you wouldn't let anyone in, even if they slipped an ID underneath.
No. No, not after what we heard. There was no way that I was going to just open a door. Truly, I did not believe that it was a real police badge. And so I said, you know, I'm aware that you've been in our school for a while now and that you should have the keys or can find them. And they did have the master keys and they tried, you know, 7, 8 different ones. And eventually the door unlocked.
What did you do after that attack? I mean, how do you wake up the next morning and go about your life?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful for days. And what happened was after living in that state for a couple of weeks of not being able to go in public, not a gas station, not a grocery store, not being able to be home alone, not being able to be in the dark, it was really incredibly infuriating. At the same time, I was very much trying to answer the whys. Why did this happen? Why our school? And what I came to find was that I was never going to answer those whys, not then, not now, not ever, and that instead I needed to focus my energy on questions that could be answered. And for myself, there were two. You know, how do I make sure this day does not define my students and myself? And the second was, how do we get our control back? Because it was taken from us on that day. And those two questions led me on my path of healing. You know, I say all the time, I will never move on from December 14th, but every day I will move forward. And I think that's a really important distinction for anyone going through a really hard time.
Explain that distinction between moving on and moving forward.
Of course. You don't have to move on from your hard time. It is wholly a part of you. It happened to you. You can, you know, grieve it, mourn it, be sad about it, cry when, you know, you're moved to and feel those emotions. You know, and to know that that's okay, but at the same time, to make a conscious effort that you're always moving forward with purpose.
How did you start teaching your students again? Because one of the things you talk about is that their attention spans were gone. You know, lessons you taught at the beginning had gone. It almost sounds like PTSD among the class.
Well, it was very much like going back to the beginning of the school year. We were in a brand new space. What they had heard and experienced on that day was horrible and very different than, you know, others' experience. They were so aware that our survival was because we had a hiding place in our room. And now we were in a new space with nowhere to hide. And my students would ask me, you know, every day, Ms. Roig, what if a bad guy comes? Ms. Roig, what would we do? Where would we hide? And I couldn't answer that question for them. For me, after what my kids lived through, my utmost and only concern was them being okay and feeling okay. And that's what I advocated for.
Well, you also had this idea, which was that all these donations that were pouring into your school from all over the country, you could take those donations and help another classroom.
Yeah, so it was this real light bulb moment after giving and giving to my kids for a week or two. As their teacher, I realized that if I did not take the teachable moment to teach them that in life, when you get, you have to give, that I would be completely missing the mark. And I brought a box in front of them one day and started pulling objects out. And I posed the question, you know, why did somebody do this for us? And immediately they said they wanted to be kind. They wanted to be nice. And I said, you're absolutely right. And what should we do when somebody's nice and kind to us? And they said, well, we should be nice to someone else. We should be kind. And I said, you're absolutely right. And then I didn't pose a question, but the most incredible thing happened. Their hands started to raise again and they said, who are we going to help? How are we going to help them? What are we going to give? And it was this moment of my kids. Here we are 3 weeks after the worst day of our lives and many people's lives. They were able to feel pure joy and they were able to have smiles on their faces and to feel excited about giving to someone else. And that was the moment that I realized, okay, all kids need this. All kids need to be able to experience giving freely. All kids need to be able to experience that in life we're all connected. And so that was the night that I went home and I just started Googling around and discovered that there was nothing else like it out there. And I thought, well, there needs to be.
How are your former students doing now?
Well, you know, you can't answer any statement as a blanket statement for sure. I can't say, oh, they're all great or oh, they're all terrible. You know, I think healing is a process. And certainly there are peaks and valleys. I am so incredibly grateful that I get to keep in touch with my students and their families. I saw almost all of my students this past December, and I saw a few of my students 2 weeks ago. And I'm just so grateful that I get to continue to be a part of their lives and to see them, you know, move forward and flourish as now fourth graders. It's such a gift.
And what would your advice be to the people in Umpqua Community College out in Roseburg, Oregon, as they now pick up the pieces after what happened last week?
Oh, that's so hard. I think remembering that it really is a process and that what seems insurmountable now, having really truly been there, doesn't have to be, really does not have to be. And, you know, the path to healing is a long one, and just, you know, certainly my thoughts and prayers are with each of them as they, you know, work to do that.
That's Caitlin Roig-DeBellis. Her new book is called Choosing Hope, Moving Forward from Life's Darkest Hours. And as we said, she's a former Sandy Hook first grade teacher. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.